Hi, welcome to the First Issue Club. We're your weekly comic book podcast where I don't do the intro a lot.
Whoa, he did it! And he acknowledged that it was different.
I stole it from Mike.
Well done.
No, we're your weekly comic book reading club.
Yeah.
Where, just like Sue Storm, we love a good read. Oh, so good.
Mm-hmm.
It feels weird to do it, though.
You're nailing it, and I'm glad to have you as my protege. Power move.
Well, Mike,
you didn't know we had a mentor-mentee relationship until just now.
I did, but you know, I like it, sir.
All right. Of course, young lad. Have you ever had somebody like blatantly power move you at work?
I like my boss. I'll preface this.
Yeah.
But he was in town for a thing, and we did do an after hours thing, whatever. Yeah. And we were talking very colloquially to each other, yes, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I think he was going for like something like, I'm willing to mentor you without like, you know, me having to go down on one knee and him like knighting me and
yes,
all that stuff. Right. Whatever. But he said something along the lines of like, where do you see your career going? And I was like, whoa, man, this is like,
we're like having drinks.
Yeah. But that was one of those moments where I was like,
yeah,
what?
Oh, we're not hanging out.
Yeah, we're not hanging out. You're not a dude anymore. You're back to being my boss.
Once I had, I used to like have like a shared office with like three or four people.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, you just vent and like bitch about like, this meeting went really shitty, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so we were doing some of that. And everybody was just like commiserating over this one shared experience we had. And then my boss walks in and one of the people in the room goes, hey, that stuff that you were just feeling just now, it's going to be all right, man.
Oh, my.
Brush your shoulders off, you know, small potatoes. And just started doing this whole, like, you needed, like, emotional coaching after, like, a business meeting or something.
Yeah.
And I was just like, now I'm going to have to explain to my boss that I'm, like, not upset. And it's going to seem ingenuine. But, like, I mean, kudos. Like, you did that was a killer power move that would have, like, never occurred to me.
Yeah.
To just start, like, emotionally, like, being, like, hey, I know you had a hard time with that. It's going to be all right, man.
Yeah.
Like, what a fucking shithead power move.
Yeah. And then, like, in front of your boss, be like, man, Mike, you really killed it in that. I know that took it out of you.
But, yeah, right.
Get fucked.
Oh, boy. This is the podcast where we talk about comic books.
What?
Today, just like most other days where our podcasts are being listened to, we are discussing first issues. A lot came out this week. Some quick hits. Some of these we're going to talk about. We've got Rat City, Uncanny Valley, Hercules.
Oh!
There's another... Is that a Disney thing?
Yeah, it's Dynamite's doing like...
Dynamite is doing like
Disney
old
heroes
cartoons
and
stuff like
and
that.
Stuff. Yeah.
Monsters Are My Business, Dungeons & Dragons book called Thief of Many Things, When the Blood Has Dried, Dead Weights, a comic on Image called Saint Mercy Godlands. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
Let me tell you this, comic book creators. When you have a comic book title called something like Saint Mercy : Godlands, I think...
That's a sequel.
Saint Mercy Godlands is a sequel to another previous Saint Mercy book.
Yeah.
And if it is not that, then it's a misleading title. You should have just called it Saint Mercy.
Or if you're gonna :
Yeah.
It's Saint Mercy Beginnings. Saint Mercy Origins.
Yeah, sure.
But even then, that could be a prequel.
I know, it does sound like maybe a prequel. Lose the two dots if you're launching a new comic book, fresh start.
I think
people buy less copies of these things.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking new exciting story, first appearances, something that could be buzzworthy. Instead, it's like, I've never heard of this, and they're already doing a second volume.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah. So we didn't read it. Because it's trash. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. I'm totally joking.
I haven't read it yet. I kind of missed it, but I put it on my list of first issues, and that's what happens. So first, we're going to talk about the comic book news before we get into some of those titles I just rattled off. One of the biggest things going on in the comic book space at this moment is WhatnotCon.
Oh, yes.
What do you know about WhatnotCon, and are you invested in it at all?
It is a virtual comic book podcast.
Yes.
Comic podcast. That's us. It is a virtual con happening on Whatnot. I know that there's a promo code out there that you can get $20 off your order.
Yeah, and there's also a promo that's like when you create a new account, you get $15 towards an order, and you can combine those two. So if you don't have a Whatnot account, you've got $35 free worth of like Whatnot cash.
Correct. And you can use it on anything. Anything on Whatnot.
It's wild, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, I've bought some like amazing things for 10, 15 bucks on Whatnot before.
Yeah, I bought a lot of good stuff on Whatnot. The only thing I really know about the con is I think the next bullet point on your list, but it's the Marvel blind bags for X-Men 97-1.
I say let's go ahead and get into the blind bags, but let me tell you this.
Yeah.
The blind bags were merely announced in the run-up to WhatnotCon. It's kind of like bouncing off of the hype of people discussing the virtual convention and not necessarily a part of it.
But
these blind bag things are releasing in May.
What?
Yes.
The article I read said creators on Whatnot will have them.
Not right. Not during WhatnotCon, as far as I know.
Boo. I mean, for a lot of reasons, boo, but...
Well, let me tell you this. For a virtual convention that I got an email about being like, check it out, and it had a lot of links to things that sounded pretty cool, but every link just took me to the same place.
Yeah.
And it was a long list of sellers that I couldn't tell what are the sellers that I care about. Why do I care about them? They had like six Whatnot convention exclusives. If you're a comic book fan, you want to pick up, hey, these are the covers I can only get during this one period of time or at this one place. Like, that's fun and exciting. There's like no direction of what sellers are going to have these things.
Yeah.
It just seems like a mondo list of people selling junk.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what Whatnot is, right?
That is kind of what Whatnot is, and maybe the con is just a celebration of that, and it's not that much different than normal Whatnot, other than there's a lot of sellers selling at that particular time.
I think the con is geared toward people that are really invested in the community. Because that's one of the selling points, or at least I see it as one of the selling points of Whatnot, is that it's, you can talk to other people during these auctions, right? Yeah. You can talk to the sellers during these auctions, and I think there are probably a lot of people out there that aren't sitting in front of these two microphones that are really invested in that community aspect.
Yeah.
That I think will get a lot out of WhatnotCon.
And you might say that if I'm one of those people and I have a favorite seller, I'm really excited for WhatnotCon and their sale.
Yeah.
Because everybody's going to go balls to the wall this weekend with like giveaways and auctioning off like massive key issues, all that sort of good stuff.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's my thought anyway.
Yeah.
So like,
I would have liked a little more clarity in the communication and marketing of this, just to like let me know like where can I get the things.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like newbie stuff.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
And I as cool as a thing and as big as a footprint that they've made on the comic book market, I still think there are a lot of people who are kind of scared of like joining a live stream.
Oh, totally.
And being like, this person just like said my username and are like trying to sell me things. And if it's just you and like five other people on a stream at any random time, it can be kind of like uncomfortable that no one wants to buy anything.
Oh yeah. I've been in streams with hundreds of people where nobody wants to buy
anything.
Yeah,
right. And the seller's like, wow, really?
Well, have things people want.
Yeah, I mean, totally.
Yeah, okay. All right. So WhatNotCon is happening, regardless of our feelings about it.
Let's move on.
The discourse that I think at least First Issue Club should be involved in is the Marvel blind bags.
Yeah.
These are bundles, I'll say, of four different covers of the same issue of X-Men 97 issue one.
Yes.
Right? And
imagine a trading card pack.
Yeah. Filled with comics.
But it's full of comics. The same issue of comics, different covers.
Yes. And there are ratio covers, right? Five different. There's like a one in 1,000, a one in 250, a one in 100, you know, that or whatever. That are like gold foiled and
red foil,
all
whatever
that
else.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah. Creating scarcity.
Yeah.
And I think the lowest ratio ones, the issues that are one in 250 are signed.
Okay, so maybe that puts another spin on it, too.
Yeah.
My question, though, is, because Andy does not have great luck when it comes to, I mean, stuff. So, like, if I buy four of these and they all have the exact same cover four times, I mean, I'm sure one of the slots in there is, like, a guaranteed whatever. Like, they have to have a rare slot, right? In order to make it like worth anything, right?
I would think so. I would think if you're buying one of these packages, you get it. I would assume anyway, this hasn't been stated, but I would assume you would get at least one of the ratio comics.
Yeah. And then like probably there's an exclusive that is in every pack.
I would guess.
I have not read the breakdown.
Yeah.
But that is my guess.
There's four different covers, like you mentioned, a bunch of different trade dresses.
Yeah.
Each bag has three issues in it.
Three, okay.
Yeah.
So my guess is that one of those slots is a ratio. One of them is probably an exclusive that's in every pack that you can only get in the pack.
I think all of them are only in the pack.
Oh. Okay.
These are four pack only comics.
So then,
but some of them are like, you could think of it as like a base card in a trading card set.
Yeah, a common, right?
Yeah, a common, right.
That's what I'm trying to stab at.
Yes.
It's like, if I open one of these, do I get three commons?
That would be such a bummer.
Three of the same cover?
I would
lose my mind.
And I'm imagining they haven't announced the price yet. These are probably going to be extremely expensive. Don't be surprised if these are $60 or more for three comics, three issues of the same comic.
For sure. For sure.
I think this is very much hype beast culture, overpay for the chance at something rare kind of a thing.
It stabs at what I have experienced, at least, a lot of WhatNot sellers are.
Yeah.
Like, Tyler Kirkham and Mike Mayhew come to mind. They do this a lot where they'll have like, it's an exclusive cover, which is always cool. You know what you're getting.
Yep.
But then they'll have like blind versions. Okay, is it the virgin? Is it the foil? Is it the whatever?
Yeah.
And then they'll have like, oh, is it signed in a different way? Or sketched, or
this stuff is wild to me that a creator can have a bunch of issues of their comic and then say, okay, I'm signing this one in slime green.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say, I'm only signing 20 of them in slime green. Uh-huh. You're getting one of 20.
Yeah.
And then the next one is signed in neon blue and I'm signing 50 of them in neon blue, so it's a little less scarce.
Yeah.
It's wild that people perceive that as a thing that would be more valuable than the next one.
Yeah.
That it's just, the only difference is it's not, you still have a signed copy. It's just signed with a different marker. Like, that's something that doesn't get, like, capture my interest.
Yeah, especially when, like, because to me, that's a matter of personal taste.
Yeah.
Like, I should be able to pick. I get the trade thing where it's like, you've got 25 trade dress and only five of them are virgins or what, you know, like that kind of scarcity. But like, let me pick what color I want the signature in, right? Yeah. If you're going to do colors.
Yeah.
Don't make it a fucking blind bag or like, let me, if I want to get a sketch, let me know that it's going to be sketched.
Yeah.
Before or like what character is going to be on it or, and I guess I mean, I get the idea that all the signatures are the same, but one of them is sketched.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of cool.
Yep.
But for it to be like a random thing every time, I don't like it.
I guess the selling point is that Whatnot is kind of a community wherein I can interface directly with my fans.
Yeah.
So if Tyler Kirkham is doing this and he's signing his 20 things slime green, like you care because he's your favorite artist.
Yeah.
And you're getting direct access to him. And one of those things has a remark on it. Maybe his remarks are like way out of my price range, but I can afford like a $20 shot at one. That at a minimum, at least I get a signed comic book out of the deal, right?
Oh, Mike D, my sweet summer child. Number one, Tyler Kirkham is not on those streams. It's Tyler Kirkham's assistant.
Oh, is he not?
No.
Oh.
Mike Mayhew isn't either.
Really?
Really.
Well, let me say this. There's a lot of creators that are on these streams, and it's really fun.
Yeah.
Like when Todd McFarlane gets on a stream... I am there for the Todd Father signing stuff live, telling funny stories about like the time they made this, that, or the other, pulling his son on screen who's just like, Dad. Like, all that stuff is so much fun. Scotty Young did one directly with his fans. There's been a handful that I've watched. So it happens.
Yeah. I've never seen. Because Kirkham and Mayhew have like dedicated stores on whatnot, and maybe they do it once a week or something. I've never seen them on
there. You've never seen them on there. That's too bad. Yeah. I think it's really cool when creators get on there and you can like actually face-to-face with people.
I agree. And maybe that's part of what makes me roll my eyes so much is because it's just some intern who's like, okay, next up is this same thing, but he's got like a piece of cardboard in front and he's like, who knows what you're going to get? And then somebody bids $75 and it's like, oh, it's a trade dress and it's signed in black Sharpie. Okay, next up.
That's
it's
a drag.
Like, you know,
I didn't realize this was the format of the thing.
Yeah.
I thought you were buying things in like the buy it now section.
No, it's okay. That's the format.
That's bizarre.
It's trash. I do not like it.
Huh.
Sam I am.
All right, another edition of What Not to Do.
I mean, I'm going to be on
whatnot.com. App.
I'm going to be on whatnot.com this weekend.
I'll probably watch a stream or two of some of the people that like I've bought stuff from before and just see what they've got going on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Frankie's Comics, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people do like Frankie's Comics.
I love all their stuff.
The names of my people isn't coming to mind right now, but
yeah.
I don't know. Check it out. Whatnot is kind of fun, and you can get some great deals on it. You just got to find the creators you like, and it's fun once you get in there and find a community that kind of suits you.
Yeah.
All right. Podcast mascot just came in and dropped us a toy off.
Thanks,
later,
Louis.
Later, Louis the Poodle. All right. Are video game movies coming for comic book movies next?
I think it's really interesting that you chose this to be on the main episode.
Really?
We could talk about this for hours.
Yeah, we could.
I've
seen so many articles about this thing in particular.
Yeah.
That I'm just today that I'm wondering if there was some like market report that showed some trend or something that spurred all these like conversations, or if it was just the new Fallout trailer getting dropped.
So the show came out last night.
The show came out
as of this recording.
Okay, that's probably why I'm seeing all these articles.
And it's getting very good reviews. on top of that, what was the other adaptation that...
I mean, Last of Us was huge.
Last of Us, thank you. That's the other huge one.
Mario, ever heard of him?
True, Mario. are they... video game adaptations are going to be the next wave of entertainment because of these successful shows. I don't think they'll replace comic book movies because comic book movies are just kind of ingrained in the culture now. But the reason that these are good is because they're being given good creators and I'll say the respect they deserve while adjusting my monocle.
Yeah.
You know, but like you think about that Mario movie from the 90s, and like the people who made that didn't want to make that movie. They wanted to make a different movie and then they slapped Mario on it.
Yeah, right.
But that's not the way these shows are being created now. They're being taken seriously.
Yep.
And they're already like beloved IPs in their own rights.
Yes, right? Exactly right.
You can't just like that Michael Fassbender Assassin's Creed movie.
Yep.
Right? That was no good because like Assassin's Creed is not good for the story. Nobody's like,
yep.
I love the parts in Assassin's Creed where I play as the non-assassin guy. Those are my favorites, the present day stuff, right?
Totally.
But something like Fallout is very steeped in its own story and lore and world. Yeah. Something like Last of Us is very, it's a very human story steeped in its own mythos.
Yeah, exactly right. It's one of those things wherein I think the video game stuff maybe has a little bit of an edge on comics, at least as far as popular video games and popular comic books go, right? Because when you think pop comic book movie, you think juiced up superhero with superpowers.
Yeah.
You don't think something like Matt Kent or Jeff Lemire getting adapted. You know what I mean?
Oh, God. Department H would be an incredible TV series.
I think it's in production.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. It's got a really... At one point, it had a really cool director attached to it. So hopefully that ends up happening. But you've got mega popular video games that kind of have the narrative feel of something like a Department H.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, just because it's a video game movie doesn't mean it falls into the stereotypical box of video game movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. At least not as much as comic book movie falls into a genre.
Yeah. My dad would call them popcorn movies.
Yeah, right. Right.
Where, like... it's not an indie thing. It's a whatever. But you're right. The recent successful stuff, Last of Us and Fallout, has been like prestige television.
Yeah, and they're like, they're sci-fi, right? But they're not so... They're all like holistically different from one another.
Yes.
Same with like, did you watch the Twisted Metal?
Oh my God, it was so much fun.
It was really fun. It's just like a comedy show.
Yeah.
That didn't take itself too seriously, had a little bit of heart.
Yeah.
Like, it was fun. And you've got a built-in audience because you've got a fandom.
White guys in their 30s. You could say it. There's two of them right here, man. White guys in their 30s who are like, remember Twisted Metal? Dude, I still remember the God Code.
We're not proud.
Oh, I am. I fly my freak flag as high as it'll get, baby.
But yeah, I do think like people are really stoked on a Zelda movie coming out and stuff like this.
Oh yeah.
In a way that you would expect people to just be like, ugh, another superhero movie. Like Zelda is a superhero, right? But it doesn't. It doesn't have the same sort of fatigue for some reason that a lot of the other comic book things have. And maybe it's just because it's a beloved character that, you know, sits outside of the Marvel universe. You know, people are kind of tired of the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
And people are tired of being disappointed by DC movies and Sony movies.
It's because video game movies have been dog shit for so long that, like, the assumption going in is that they'll be dog shit. And when they're actually really good, it's like, oh, shit. We need to pay attention.
Yeah, right.
What's a game you'd like to see turned into a movie?
Oh, Burger Time.
Burger Time. One where you make burgers?
You run over burger ingredients on scaffolding, and then they fall to make a complete hamburger, and pickles and things chase you around.
No, they did that already.
Burger Time was a...
Yeah, that's a show.
The Bear?
The Bear. You knew exactly where I was going.
Yeah, chef. That was just to buy me time for, like, a serious answer, because that was the first video game that popped into my head. I used to play that religiously. My favorite game that isn't Zelda, lately anyway, was probably Horizon Zero Dawn.
Would be an incredible,
franchise. And I thought that first game had such an incredible narrative arc. And it was so beautiful, and it would be really interesting to see something like... It's almost like, though, the game was so close to storytelling. Yeah. It was like, you know, it was like an interactive movie that it's like, I don't know that I necessarily need it to be a show or anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It kind of is more fun to be like, Kid Icarus is going to be a movie. Like, what the hell are they going to do with that?
Yeah.
It's like a thing I've played, and I'm familiar with all the little, like, beeps and blops of it. And so when they show little Easter eggs from the game, I can be like, I remember that because I'm an old guy in his 40s.
Yeah.
But,
but if they did like a Horizon series that featured like a new protagonist,
maybe told you a different story in the universe.
Yeah,
sure,
that would be interesting.
That would be cool.
Like a supplement material to the game.
I would love to hang out in that universe more.
Yeah,
I don't know that game is maybe popular enough to do something like that, which is wild because it's such a big production game.
It's so good.
But I haven't.
Both of them. Are incredible.
I liked Forbidden West.
Uh-huh.
It's the second one. I liked Forbidden West a lot too.
They're really good.
The
one that comes up to me kind of in the same way that I would like to see, like, spend more time in that world is BioShock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't need the same story about Jack from the first game.
Yeah.
But I would love to see Rapture in live action.
Dead Space.
Oh, my God.
A great horror movie.
Yeah.
But I even think, like, I really do think the things I'm more interested in over those are things like, is Rocket League the game where you hit a soccer ball with cars?
Yeah.
I think I'd like to see a Rocket League movie.
Yeah.
Like, more than I'd want to see a Horizon movie.
For sure.
Or a BioShock movie.
Well, because you can make that story anything.
Yeah, right? Like, it's like the idea of what are they going to do with it, and I'm going to see cars hitting soccer balls.
Yeah. Is a, like, young up-and-coming Rocket Leaguer struggles against all odds, right?
Yeah, like that sounds really fun to go. It sounds more fun and less tedious to go see than like a BioShock movie or Deep Space movie.
I would love to see a BioShock movie.
Yeah.
But I'll go see Rocket League with you.
All right. Okay. One of the other news hits I saw, Jeff Lemire announced an ongoing that I think is happening at Boom Studios.
Uh-huh.
And in this article that was kind of announcing that partnership, he was talking about like his like love of the ongoing series and how that's becoming more fleeting in the industry.
Oh, yeah.
And so he wanted to do something like that, that people could like return to or really get invested in over time. And it just made me think, like, definitely, like, a lot of my buying habits, and it's probably just because things are trending more towards like maxi series and mini series lately, that I do buy a lot of those things. How do you feel about the idea of like the art of the ongoing? At least especially for indie comics, right? Where it's like, it's exceedingly rare in indie comics. And you kind of have to be a name like Jeff Lemire to even like say, I think we're going to try to commit to at a minimum 24 issues of this thing. What do you think about pulling more ongoing comics?
I think what's more important to me as a reader is a cohesive, comprehensive story. If you have a book that you have 20 solid issues of, I would rather read, or okay, let's start with 12, right?
Yeah.
You have an idea for a banger of a maxi series.
Yep.
If you get to issue 6 and you're like, oh shit, I know a way I can turn this into 24 or 50, do that. But I would rather read a story that has a comprehensive beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
Than something that like meanders around.
This is the America television versus British television conundrum, wherein a lot of British TV shows kind of are like, it's going to be 2 or 3 seasons.
Yeah.
And so we know that there's an end goal we can work towards.
Right.
Whereas if we find a show that works really well in America, it just like never ends and never ends. And then the ending is very dissatisfying because it was never built to end.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't think that to say that the ongoing is dead, or not that he used that kind of inflammatory language, but like Brian K. Vaughan can do it.
Yeah.
Right? Like Why the Last Man, Saga, all that, you know, ran for 50, 70, whatever issues.
Yep.
So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, but like you have to have the ideas for it.
Yeah.
Or I would rather you have the ideas for it. Cause even some stuff like Batman, where, you know, I've bought 5 and 6 issues of Batman at a time just out of like obligation.
Yeah. You know? Right. I've been buying it for so long that it's like, I gotta fill this 5-issue gap.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if the story's not catching me this time.
And I'll re-pick it up, you know, in 3 issues when the next arc starts.
Yeah.
I would almost rather them just end the story and then take a month off or something. And I know that that's not how, like, businesses work. But, like, you know, we talked about Man or Black on the Patreon, right? Yep. And that was a mini 4 or 5 issues that had a story and it didn't really tie it up in the end. And you said it came back for like a volume 2.
Yep.
Do something like that. Right. Mm-hmm. Write 6 mini series that all have the same title.
Yeah.
: volume 2 or whatever. Cause I'd rather read that with a comprehensive like thing to it.
Yep. That's a great point.
So, I mean, I'll obviously give Jeff Lemire, do whatever you want, man.
I will give Jeff Lemire 6 issues of anything before I decide it's not for me.
Yeah, for sure.
I believe in him so much that I will just like, I'm in for at a minimum 6 issues, like one probably full complete story arc. Definitely. If we're thinking how like trades typically work.
Definitely.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think it's an unfortunate thing in the industry where it's built itself in a way where readership does probably trail off after 6 to 12 issues. And that's the reason we've created the maxi format.
Right.
Is that like people are willing to commit to 1 year of monthly comic books. And beyond that, you're just like, not making back what you would from a business perspective.
Yeah.
If you'd just released a new #1 instead of an issue 13.
Right. But on the flip side, we talked about this on the Patreon too, I think, you know, Vision. If Tom King hadn't assigned that exclusive with DC, you would have read issue 13 of Vision, right?
Yeah.
I would have. I think everybody who's reading that book would have.
Yeah.
Assuming the ideas were there, I guess.
Yeah, right. Was that book intent? That book seemed as if it was intended to end when it did.
You're right.
Like you were saying, tell a full and complete story, and instead of just meandering forever.
Yeah, you know, somebody who did it really well, in that like connected mini series way mm-hmm. was Cullen Bunn. Mm-hmm. You think about his Deadpool trilogy as it's collected, right? Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe. Deadpool Killustrated and Deadpool kills Deadpool.
Yeah.
Those three stories all tell one story.
Yeah.
But they're three disparate miniseries.
Yeah.
I would rather read that. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, Cullen Bunn's coming back with another Deadpool mini.
Yeah.
That continues the story. Oh, Jeff Lemire's coming back with whatever, Boom series volume 2. Then, like, four issues of like some weird meandering connecting story while he gets to his next great idea.
Mm-hmm. I think there is something too that's stressful as a buyer about ongoing series, that like if I know this book's going to go to 20 issues, it's like I'm committing, you know, a lot of some comics cost $6-7 an issue now.
Yeah.
And it's like, are you committing $7 a month to this a new series, and does that mean you have to drop an existing series? The mini series are a little more easy to stomach or like stretch your budget because you know they're going to fall off at some point and you're going to be like done with it.
Yeah.
As compared to like, I'm going to be spending enough money on this to like replace one of my like streaming services monthly.
Yeah.
On TV.
Or even if, you know, if the concept of the story catches you, but a certain arc doesn't hit you the right way. Like, yeah. I was kind of that way with Deadly Class.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the first, like, I don't know, 10 issues.
Yeah.
And then, like, it kind of hit a lull, but then it, like, came back.
Yep.
You know? That's tough to swallow.
Yeah. And there's a thing I do, I feel like, as a collector, too, where I say, I buy the first story arc of something.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, the monthly cost of it might be out of my range, but as a collector, I feel good because I've got all these first appearances and a lot of the foundational story for the comic that's going to take off. And then as compendiums and collected editions and trades come out, I can pick those up and read them as a group. I do feel like I'm sometimes doing a disservice to the creators I love when I do that, though. Like, if Jeff Lemire's writing an ongoing story and I like the first arc of it, I want to keep buying it because I want to support Jeff Lemire and I want him to keep making kick-ass things that I like.
Yeah.
Right? But the more cost-effective way for me to do that, and maybe the better reading experience for me, too, is to be able to sit down and read 12 issues in a row in a collected edition. So, just, I don't know, tough as a collector and tough as a publisher to just like, before a book's even come out, commit to it as an ongoing or commit to it as a maxi.
Right.
When you'd love to have, maybe the maxi is the book that needs to keep going and the ongoing is the one that you wish, like, I wish we only did 6 issues of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Complicated business. That's what we're here to report. I'm going to do quick hits for the rest of the news because we're already deep into the episode.
Okay.
Marvel's doing 3D, a 3D line of comic books, and they're starting with the first appearance of Deadpool. My take is 3D comics have never been good. Those glasses suck. When you put them on, all you see is like this gross brown mix of blue and red and the colors that are actually on the page. Like, it turns to muck. Like, who likes 3D comics?
Well, they're not doing it with the red and blue anymore, right? They're doing it with the...
I think they are.
No, they're not.
The cover, maybe, I don't know, for the promo of this thing, if it was, like, shown with the red and blue hues just to convey 3D, and maybe that's promo only and not how the, like, technology actually works, but it was red to one side, blue to the other side. They overlap on the art. Those are terrible.
Yeah, those are bad.
Don't buy those. Marvel, put your money elsewhere. Trina Robbins passed away, and I would just recommend you read Comic Book Resources had an article, and so did a couple other comic book outlets, or a Wikipedia page. Like, really cool, like pioneer of independent comics and women's lib comics, the alt comic scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, was someone who over time and over the course of their career got more into mainstream comics and did work on Wonder Woman and all of this stuff. But really interesting person who led a very interesting life and contributed to comics in a really cool way. So Trina Robbins, do yourself a favor and cement her in your brain as a really cool pioneer of comic books to pay respects and say so long from our mortal coil. What If Donald Duck Became Wolverine is a comic book coming out on Marvel soon.
Finally. Greg gets his answer.
I love it. No complaints.
No, it's going to be goofy.
Sometimes we complain about these things as like cash grabs, but this one I'm like, no notes.
Dude, if it's a one shot.
I think it is.
Who gives a shit?
It's going in like, the tradition of normal. Okay, and yeah. In the synopsis, I read one key sentence that started with old Donald Duck.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, here we go. They're even making fun of old man Logan.
Oh, yeah.
Like with old Donald Duck. We've got old man Donald Duck, first appearance. What if
first appearance.
Donald Duck becomes Wolverine?
Slab it.
I love it. So funny.
We'll have a whole episode dedicated to it.
And then I've seen a handful of articles this week about like pictures on set of the new Daredevil series.
Yeah.
And the actress who played Vanessa Fisk had originally been recast. And as part of that like big drama like a year or so ago where they're like, we're firing everybody and starting the show over again, they cast the original actress again to come back from the Netflix series.
Great.
So she, at least we're speculating anyway, plays Vanessa in the new series. Part of me was wondering if that, like, are they going to play with the Rose? Because they didn't have to bring Vanessa back. Is Vanessa going to be in flashbacks only?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know how that's going to work, but it'd be fun to do something with the Rose in this series and then finding a way to like cross over Spider-Man into like a gang war thing.
Sure.
If there's still an MCU in three or 4 years, like who even knows what happens there. But I don't know. Kind of fun, interesting stuff.
Also, footage was at CinemaCon is happening this weekend.
Okay,
last weekend. Footage was shown of Captain America Brave New World, where Thunderbolt Ross, as now played by Harrison Ford.
How did I miss this news?
Yeah, he got recast.
Wow, okay.
Thunderbolt Ross approaches Anthony Mackie's Captain America and asks him to reform the Avengers.
Okay, cool.
So, very cool, I think. I am excited to see Anthony Mackie's Captain America because I really liked Falcon and Winter Soldier. Mm. So,
I do think, again, sorry we're taking so long to get into comic books. I do think the giving people time off between Marvel movies is already working in their favor.
Yes.
Because I am like, my mind is reeling with the things that they're going to do. How are X-Men going to get like continually be introduced to this? How does the Fantastic Four stuff work with the like alternate dimensions and bringing together all these like classic heroes? It is so wild to me that they did this Mondo Marvel initiative that included so many characters but has yet to feature so many of the most iconic Marvel characters.
It's going to be like, a lot of fun.
So much of their cachet and huge characters have not appeared in the MCU yet, and that is nuts.
Yeah, D-Man is still off the table.
That's exactly the sort of stuff I'm talking
about.
How
and why? Grizzly, nowhere to be seen.
But we finally got the Porcupine and She-Hulk.
True, we did. You're right. Okay.
Yeah, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics. You read one or two, right?
I read a comic book.
I read a big old stack.
Okay.
Do you want to go first or last?
I'll go first and go quick.
Okay.
Okay, so I read Cullen Bunn's Monsters Are My Business, And it did have a subtitle that were like, "And my business is bloody" or something like that.
Oh, hell
yeah.
So
really fun subtitle. So obviously we love Cullen Bunn on this podcast. We've got like a team of kind of hunters, I guess, that track down these like nightmare creatures that have come from outer space to Earth. And this guy kind of works as like a neighborhood guy who's working for like chicken and dumplings and left food leftovers just for like the goodwill of the neighborhood. He's like a big character with a big personality, and he's got like a koala as a sidekick, and then like a sorceress who like chimes in sometimes, and they're just trying to like keep their neighborhood in check and like do good.
Oh, so it's like Neighborhood Watch.
Right. He's like an ex-biker. And in this first issue, he finds out his old biker gang is up to some nefarious stuff and has kidnapped some people. He gets sucked back into like taking on kind of like a bigger project rather than, you know, getting a monster off of like Mrs. O'Flannery's roof.
Okay.
Because it's keeping her up from sleeping at night.
Yeah.
Like, he's going from like the smaller stuff back to the big time because he's been roped into a bigger thing. So that's like kind of my quick
that sounds like a lot of fun
pitch on this comic. And it is fun. It's low on dialogue, high on action. The artistic style kind of like reminds me of a Image cliffhanger comic.
Oh, okay.
In the sense that it's like during a time when the 90s had already established its like feel, like they kind of came onto the scene with these like kind of more like cartoony, fun, modern, different looking art styles that just kind of stood out a little bit. It has
Joe
that.
Mad.
Yeah, it has a kind of vibe to it like that.
Okay.
So really cool book. If you're a Cullen Bunn fan, it's not, I wouldn't say it's like complete prototypical Cullen Bunn. It feels a little different and lighter and looser than normal.
There's not a family with problems.
Right. So I say check it out. It was a big recommend from me.
Awesome. I'll buy anything from Cullen Bunn.
Right on.
Okay, like I said, I read a big stack. Some of this stuff is from last week, so forgive me, but it's new to me,
hey.
So you have to suffer through it. I think the big release of the week, at least in terms of name recognition.
And new indie comics, yeah.
New indie comics. Tony Fleeks, has a new book, Uncanny Valley.
You can put it on our new little stand.
Oh, our little stand. Look at that.
How about that?
How to describe this book. So this kid is having problems in school. Weird stuff keeps happening to him. In the first couple pages, he is like dared to jump off a bridge by some local teens, local ruffians.
Sound like real jerk offs to me.
All three of them jump off the bridge.
Oh.
The two kids he's with break their legs, and he ends up in a hole that's like shaped like him.
Okay, yeah.
You know, like Wile E. Coyote style.
Yeah,
As the book goes on, more of that kind of stuff keeps happening to him. He's kicked out of school. His mom has to deal with it. All of a sudden, this flock of crows is like following him.
Now I'm starting to pick up what you mean by he falls into a hole shaped like him. Cartoony stuff is happening to him.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, real world type things are happening to other people.
Correct.
Yeah.
What we find out is this kid, we think, is like half cartoon.
Okay.
He has a human mother and some sort of cartoon father from cartoon land.
Yep.
And he is getting sucked into some sort of cartoon woe or problem or event.
Yeah.
So really, really interesting concept. Even more interesting art, because all the real world stuff, including the kid, is drawn in a very like indie watercolor pencil kind of thing, but all the cartoon stuff is straight up cartoons and they interact with each other. So it's like
funny.
The comic book version of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Got it. Okay.
And it's dope. I mean, Tony Fleeks is like a known entity at this point.
Yep.
So it, it's really interesting. I have not read a comic like this in terms of like stylistic and story. I mean, it's a totally unique thing.
Is the city they're in like Uncanny Valley?
No, it's not called that.
Okay.
But
yeah,
it's like a normal human city.
Okay. Uncanny Valley as a term is often used to refer to a threshold at which CGI looks creepy because it's starting to look real, but not quite real enough to like feel natural. And it gives you this like gross feeling. It just like feels unnatural and gnarly.
Correct.
Like Shrek is like just cartoony enough. If they dialed up the realism a little bit, it would be like hard to watch.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or same thing with the robots. It's also applied to like, like in real life robots where they look
when they start to look too human, it's like it grosses you out.
Yeah, exactly. So that I'm sure is going to play into this.
Yeah.
The cover is a lot of fun because it mixes a lot of like cartoon styles.
Yeah.
There's like kind of a G.I. Joe looking action hero guy. And this Yosemite Sam ends up being his grandpa.
Okay, so, got it.
A lot of fun. This is definitely one to check out. This one I know is from last week. It's Street Fighter Masters Akuma versus Ryu. I have been wanting to get into Street Fighter comics for a long time.
Okay.
I'll say this up front. If you don't know anything about Street Fighter lore, pass this book. If you don't know what the like the origins of the Hadouken are, don't read it.
This is for real ones.
Yeah, I mean this is for hyper dorks like me. But the art is absolutely gorgeous. I do have to call that out. The guy who did it is Kenneth Lowe.
Okay.
And it looks like a Japanese like oil painting.
Oh, cool.
Throughout the whole thing.
Wow.
And it's just incredible.
Nice.
The book is just basically a fight scene between Ryu and Akuma. And Akuma ends up punching Ryu's good, like his ki out of him. So we're just left with the demon version of Ryu.
Okay.
Because Akuma has been beaten by Ryu in the past and wants to see if he can beat him at like his full power.
Even this is over my
head. This stuff. That's what I'm saying. All this stuff. But it's a cool issue. I would not recommend it to anybody who's unfamiliar with Street Fighter or even people who haven't read Street Fighter comics like me. I don't know that I would say.
You wouldn't have recommended it to yourself.
Yeah. Like go read Street Fighter Unlimited because that series clearly comes before this. But I don't know. Fun enough for a one-off. I got enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, cool.
So, Street Fighter. Up next, Rat City, bitch. Rat City, bitch.
This is one I'm really interested in.
This is Spawn 2099.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's the story. There's another Special Forces guy. He's on a mission. He ends up losing both his legs and gets cybernetic legs.
Yeah.
It doesn't explain it, but it tells us that there was a necro energy detonation in 2019, and this is like 21, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's something that happened in like the mainstream Spawn story.
Yeah.
That is having reverberations through time.
Yep.
And the nanobots that are in his blood pick up on that energy and are presumably going to turn him into a Spawn or give him Spawn powers.
Cool.
So again, it's Spawn 2099, but I really liked it. And this is Erica Schultz.
Yeah.
This is the first female written Spawn.
Yep.
So definitely worth checking out. I'm almost completely a Spawn newbie.
So it's probably a good onboarding point.
It's a great
it's a real fresh place to start. Whereas like Gunslinger Spawn and Medieval Spawn are things that are kind of a little more steeped in the lore and bogged down in other crazy Spawn details.
Correct.
That would maybe make it less accessible.
Yeah. And there are clearly like plot points in this that I don't know anything about.
Yeah.
But they're only mentioned in that they are like MacGuffins to the story. Mm-hmm. They don't really mean anything other than like, oh, he's got his powers because of this thing. Okay.
Yep.
If you can accept that and move on, then you're good.
I think one of the creators, if not Erica Schultz herself, did a signing at our buddy's shop, the Geekery in New Jersey.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think it was Erica Schultz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really rad.
And JD, shout out.
Yeah. So I'm stoked to read this. It's on my orders and
it's very cool.
I gotta wait a little longer to read it than you.
Yeah. It's a very cool book. And I love the design for like whatever they're gonna call him, New Spawn.
Yep.
So good stuff. Here's another one I was really excited about. This is book two from Magma. I talked about Principles of Necromancy.
Yeah.
This is their next book, Silicon Bandits.
Mm-hmm.
This is, what's the elevator pitch? Ocean's 11, but half of them are robots.
Oh, okay.
So this couple has designed like the next generation of, you know, ultimate robot, the next Jarvis. And then are immediately fired because they've created like the perfect robot that can
take their jobs.
Take their jobs. Design more robots. We were just talking about this in terms of AI.
Yeah.
But the husband says, you know, I saw this coming. He built four of these custom robots, and he wants to steal the gallium that they use to create their robots from their former boss and sell it to other people so they can make the robots instead of their former boss and like disrupt the market, make themselves rich, blah, blah, blah. So again, Ocean's 11, but half of them are robots.
Cool. I like the elevator pitch. I think it was Magma Comics.
Yeah.
Is this are they an older publisher that is like coming back?
I don't think so.
It kind of sounds familiar. It's got the name of something where you're just like, yeah, that sounds like a comic book publisher from the 90s.
But
in any case, two really cool indie books out the gate. And then the first one, amazing creators attached to it. So
yeah,
whoever's.
And the next one is Steve Orlando.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Coming out the gate swinging. Super Magma.
Strong. Super strong.
Right on. Way to go.
Yeah. I'm stoked about it. So we're not like paid by Magma or anything. Well, they're just like absolutely killing it.
Yeah. New publisher to look out for.
I know everybody's talking about how April is Ghost Machine month and nothing against Ghost Machine. I talked about all three of their issues last time, but like April is Magma month.
Let's go.
All right. Last book I have is, I always get it wrong, When the Blood Has Dried.
Yeah, I felt like this was maybe one of the more buzzworthy titles this week, at least after Rat City.
Yeah, maybe. It is.
Even though it's on Mad Cave, a smaller publisher.
It is on Mad Cave, but when Mad Cave hits, they fucking hit. They hit. This is like a straight up D&D story. Like 100%. There's adventurers meet in a tavern and have to go on an adventure. Like that is it. Like almost straight up. there's some intrigue and mystery revolving around this guild that sort of, you know, is there.
Yeah.
It's the Adventurers Guild. Are they actually like nefarious though?
Yep.
What are the intentions? That whole thing. That's like the mystery around it. But the characters are all incredibly enjoyable. There's a bartender and a bard that are like the main two that we talked to, and a little dwarf guy. Just a lot of fun. If you're a D&D person looking for even more straightforward than something like Hunger and Dusk.
Yeah.
You know, this is like right up your alley.
Totally. I do like that. I do feel like when I have a pal who's into like D&D but not necessarily reading comics, which is an interesting person, it surprises me. It happens more often than you'd think.
Yeah. Yep.
That you do kind of recommend some of these like bigger high fantasy comics that maybe aren't as accessible as I think they are. They're maybe a little more complicated, and it's good to have these comics that are like follow the typical path,
the tropes,
and the tropes a little closer.
Yeah.
That are like great onboarding points for people.
Yeah, there's
that like this sort of thing.
As someone who loves comic books, like deeply in my soul, I don't understand when somebody has a problem with like the medium itself. But that can be a big, big hurdle for people.
Yeah.
And something like When the Blood Has Dried is so accessible in its story that it might be able to get people over the hump of the medium.
Yeah. I think one of the missteps that gets made a lot in comic books and recommendations and things like that is people being like, I'm comic book curious. I'm going to read Watchmen.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of like, given it's a, it might be more accessible because it does superhero stuff, but in a way that feels more modern and relevant. But it's also like a very complex story with like a lot of panels and a lot of dialogue and probably kind of hard to follow. There's a lot of internal narration from Rorschach that's happening, like in addition to the dialogue that's going on.
Yeah.
And you forget that even like things like that, where I've got a narrator talking, I've got internal dialogue and external dialogue, that's tough for people to like keep the thread going for three different dialogues between separate panels. And to us, it's just like part of reading comics, and your mind is prepared to clock these three different things and keep the through lines going for each of them. But if you're not, you're like, I just read these three things. They don't necessarily seem attached. And then I go to the next panel and I read three things. Like, I've made it through six pages before I know it, and I've got no clue what I just read.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, and to your point, right, even the nine panel grid.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like, the nine-panel grid is, like, super... I mean, I could see somebody being like, do I read down? Do I read over?
Well, do I read across both pages?
Yeah, like... right, totally. Or do I stop at the middle spread? Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, so... But again, if you've got a friend out there who's, like, a D&D person...
Yeah, sounds like a good one to recommend.
It really is. It really is. A lot of fun.
Cool.
So, a lot of good stuff this week, honestly.
And isn't that what we're here to talk about? And we killed it right at an hour. We've delivered on our premise of being a weekly comic book podcast that talks comic book news and first issues and generally shoots for an hour. You're all welcome. If you would like another hour, we talk about books that we're reading on a more ongoing basis on this week's Patreon.
Yep.
Or the episode that'll come out Monday-ish. And... join that if you want to know what comics we're still liking that are at, you know, issue 3, 4, 5 and beyond.
Yeah, we don't ever talk about issue 10, except this week.
Except this week. We might do it more often if people like it, so.
Check us out on socials. We got to do the Greg thing. Check us out on socials. We post all of our regular podcast episodes as videos on YouTube if you want to watch us instead of listen to us. And Mike D mentioned the Patreon, First Issue Club, patreon.com/First Issue Club.
It's a great way to spend $3.99 a month, the cost of one comic book.
Ah, did we do that on purpose?
Yes.
Oh, so smart.
Bye. First Issue Club is edited and produced by Mike DeStacy, Greg Lichtig, and Andy Vargas. Follow us on social media at First Issue Club, and check out our Patreon for videos, audio, and more at patreon.com/First Issue Club.